The next speaker is Ricardo Gila Costa, who will talk about an integrative brain imaging system, fMRI and AEG, for humans and non-human primates.
I'm going to talk about recent development towards an integrative brain imaging system for both humans and non-human primates. As has been mentioned throughout this afternoon, and we're all very aware of, one of the major gaps in today's current neuroscientific research is the one between the tremendous wealth of knowledge that we have at the systems level of investigation resulting from neuropsychology and functional brain imaging methods such as EEG and fMRI, and at the cellular level, the neuronal level, resulting from invasive studies done with non-human animals. We believe that in order to bridge this gap, it's essential to go not only integrating between technologies and methods, but also integrating across species. And thus, this is what we propose. fMRI and EEG are two very well-established brain imaging technologies that, on its own, both of them have contributed significantly to insights on brain physiology. However, separate, they both have their strengths and their weaknesses. Namely, for instance, the fMRI has a high spatial resolution but has a low temporal resolution, and although the bold signal is associated with neural activity, it does not directly measure that activity. On the other hand, the EEG has a high temporal resolution and measures directly neural activity but has a low spatial resolution. So by integrating these two techniques, we believe that we can have a much better assessment of any given event, both at spatial and temporal dimensions. Moreover, if you think about the reason macaque has been used as a biological model with extensive studies throughout decades at the invasive level for cellular physiological studies. So a lot of the knowledge that we have in this level for cell physiology does not directly correlate, although a lot of inferences have been made, but does not directly correlate to what we have at the systems levels with non-invasive methods. Now, by developing these non-invasive methods in non-human primates, we believe that not only we're going to have the advantages that we have from the human part, but we can take it one step further and directly correlate it to cellular studies doing invasive methods. Now, having this done, we can establish appropriate homologous studies, both with previous and current studies between these two species, and ultimately achieve what we'd like, which is have proper, reliable inferences about invasive studies doing at the cellular level with the system levels performed in humans. We propose four specific aims to achieve this goal. The first one is creating the setup and integration of an EEG and fMRI simultaneous acquisition data in humans. The second one is the development of a non-human primate as a counterpart of this. The third, of course, is the development of a common platform, in this case using a 3T fMRI scanner and a compatible EEG acquisition system to acquire simultaneously on both species on the same platform. And then, of course, the last one is the integration of the EEG and the fMRI data in each one of these species and across species. In this first year, we have done significant advances that we think is worth reporting on both aim number one and aim number two, and I'm going to just briefly touch three significant things in each one of them. On the first item, setup and integration of EEG and fMRI data in humans. Although all this project has been done as a close collaboration, most of this part of the research has been carried out at the Swartz Center by J.R. Dwan and colleagues. So you can imagine there are different challenges about recording simultaneously two techniques. One obvious one is, are we going to avoid artifacts coming from each of the techniques onto each other? One of our initial concerns is if we have artifacts caused by the EEG recording onto the MR signal. We're using a product from brain products, an EEG system that supposedly it is fMRI compatible. Nevertheless, we want to test to verify that we have no interference between them. As you can see here, you can find the dimples around the scalp, so there's slight interference from the electrodes, but there's no invasion of the brain from it. So we're more confident that we don't have a problem with this. On the other hand, we do have a problem. This is an example of a two-back working memory task where you can clearly see artifacts by the MR pulse and also by the ballistocardiogram onto the EEG signal. So by a combination of principal component and regression analysis, we're able to almost completely remove the artifacts caused by these systems. I'm not going to go here in the interest of time. I'm not going to go into technical details of these analyses, but we're more than happy to talk about this after the lecture if someone was interested. The point that I want to try to make here is at this point, we're actually ready in humans to start acquiring simultaneously on both techniques. Now, of course, another challenge that is by no means easier than the first one is after you actually simultaneously acquire the EEG data and the fMRI bold signal data, how do you integrate these two data sets? When besides the more typical co-spatial localizations of the signal, one of the avenues of research that J.R. Dwan has been developing is exploring the possibilities using a combination of principal component analysis and independent component analysis, looking at and identifying the task-relevant component of the EEG spectral perturbation and correlate that with the fMRI bolt signal. And this is the example that we have on the lower part of the panel. Now, another part of this whole setup is the non-human primate part, and this has been carried out at the Vision Center Laboratory at the Salk Institute. And again, briefly, three challenges that we've been trying to overcome. One of them, of course, was to design and produce what will be a compatible, MRI-compatible, and EEG-adequate chair to restrain the animal. So this is what we came up with in collaboration with Applied Prototypes. The two main things about this chair, as you say, we're trying to maximize both restraint, because obviously we have to have this animal as much as we can immobilize, but also comfort, because if you have a stressed and perturbed animal during long scanning sessions, that's going to be reflected on your data. The other part, of course, is the EEG interface for the non-human primates. Now, although we've been using the same brain product system that we used on humans, the EEG human caps are simply not adequate for non-human primates. Now, this is not just a question of resizing it and making it smaller to fit the animals. As we're illustrating in these two examples, there's a significant difference on shapes between the skull of a rhesus macaque and the human, so we have to drastically modify the design of the cap in order to adequately fit the rhesus macaque skull. In this right part of the panel, what you can see is a representation of the electrode distribution in our prototype for the non-human primate EEG cap. Is a 22 channels prototype, and regarding electrode density, is comparable to a 64-channel EEG cap for humans. Now, last but not least was the issue of animal training. So we had four naive animals that have been training from the get-go. We had to design a training protocol with positive reinforcement to ultimately have the animal in this kind of condition. So this is the setup on the fMRI, chair wearing the EEG cap inside the scanner. And, of course, you have to deal with all the prepping for EEG, including lowering impedances, the prepping for the scanner. So there's a long protocol involved in this training. Two of our animals have made significant progress, and they're now ready for EEG acquisition. And having spent a significant amount of time dealing with all these software, hardware, training problems, we're now ready to start actually testing this equipment, and that's what we did with the EEG part. So this is very preliminary data done with a single animal, where just for testing the system, we did two conditions of series of visual presentation. On the first one is a flickering checkerboard that had a display for 500 milliseconds and an interstimulus interval that was randomized between 1.5 and 3.5 seconds. In the other case, we have abstract high-contrast images that were presented for 1 second with an ISI 1 to 1.5 seconds. The plots that you see on the right side are both from a lateral occipital channel, as noted on this diagram. In the first case, it's a grand average of 300 trials. In the second case, a grand average of 230 trials. Now, this is obviously very preliminary data done on a single subject, but the point we're trying to make with this, and we're very happy about, is that, first of all, there were serious concerns that we had about the quality of the signal due to several issues, like, for instance, monkeys have this thick muscle over the skull that could be causing perturbations to the signal noise ratio. And also, the fact that if you look at the brain waves, although we still wanted to refine the quality, but you can see that in general, they are very consistent with preliminary studies done using this kind of non-invasive setup in humans and done in non-human primates using invasive chronically implanted electrodes. Namely, you can look at a negative component between 100 and 200 milliseconds peak that is typically associated with visual potential paradigms, potentials. Next, well, we are finishing refining this setup, as we said, and we want to start with a validation of this study using both non-human primates and humans in EEG standalone studies using both auditory and visual stimulation. Of course, the next step that we're interested in is the implementation of the simultaneous system from EEG and fMRI in both species that we hope is going to really provide an enabling technology to link this systems-level kind of approach from non-invasive studies in humans with a cellular investigation. So you can think about using what could be called MRI-guided or EEG and MRI-guided electrophysiological studies in the monkey, and not only use this system to create inferences on previous studies, but how to design truly homologous new studies. And then, of course, a myriad of investigations can done with this. In our particular case, we're actually interested in supramodal integration and conceptual representation. Those are the questions that drive us to go back and try to create this whole technology. The advances that we've seen here enabled us to submit two funding proposals right now, one to the Salk Institute Innovation Grant, and we just submitted last week an NIH Challenge in Health and Science grant. This is definitely a combined effort, and we have a lot of people to thank. Within the Salk Institute in our lab, Ray Fung, Dean Deep, and Joanna Jacobs are the research assistants that have been working very hard on this. Margaret Mitchell is tireless in all of our efforts to different parts of logistics of the lab, and, of course, everybody on the VCL has been incredibly productive as far as brainstorming. The fMRI Center at UCSD, the director Tom Liu and Kun Liu and Cecilia Camper have been a great help to collaborate with us and try to establish the logistics and some of the parameters for the fMRI. And last but not least, at the National Institutes of Health at the Laboratory of Brain and Cognition, Andrew Bell and Leslie Unger-Leiter have been very close collaborators to develop the non-human primate fMRI component. We'd like to thank for financial support for all of the data that you've seen here, for the Kavli Institute for Brain and Mind, the Salk Institute for Biological Studies, the Katerina Foundation, and the Swartz Foundation. Thank you.
I think this is going to be a marvelous tool when it comes together. Could you say a little bit about how you'll do the analysis of the EEG and the fMRI signal? Because the EEG signal, of course, is very fast, and the fMRI signal, as you pointed out, much, much slower. How will you be looking for latency, specific latencies between the two signals?
Well, actually, what we're thinking about using is using, identifying task-relevant components of the EEG power spectrum and use that on the time scale that is comparable to the fMRI. However, it's present on this room. J.R. Dwan is probably the adequate person to answer this question more extensively since it's his work. J.R., I don't know if...
So basically, in a paper published by Scammer K, he mentioned that actually there is a, he called it event-related spectrum perturbation. So basically, this perturbation, it's somehow modulated by some modulator in the brain. So this perturbation can last for like a seconds to like a tens of seconds. So basically, we try to use this spectrum perturbation to make the time scale comparable to fMRI Bose signal. So first, we draw the relationship between these two modalities by use this phenomenon. And at the end, once we figured out which components actually related to the Bose signal, then we can go back to the original EEG signal to have higher resolution, higher temporal resolution, and do further analysis based on that.